Right, well, thank you very much for lunch. Falafel, obviously. I like. I haven't had any since last week. And I like Saudi food very much. Whenever I go to Saudi, my trousers get a little bit tighter than they were before I went. I think everybody who was going to ask a question this morning asked them, they got a hold of me. Okay, good. What I want to talk about now is different from what I talked about this morning, obviously, or I wouldn't be doing it. What I want to talk about now is the actual process of writing, which I think is going to be more relevant. People who are nearly finished, it won't be quite so relevant to you, and it will be more relevant to those who are starting out. So this is based again on writing a paper for publication, but I've tried to make it as specific to a thesis as possible. But the ideas are much the same. Now, I know that you're writing in a second language, which is very difficult. I don't have any comments on whether you should write in Arabic and then translate into English, or try and think in English and write in English. People give different bits of advice. All I'll say about that is, in case anybody asks me, write in whatever language you want, and as long as you get the writing done, that's the main thing. But I've no strong feelings about which way you should do it. And when I'm supervising international students, I've no hello. Yes, it is. It's available on YouTube, but it's specific to publications of papers. But it's much the same content. If you my YouTube channel and go to the playlist on writing for publication, you'll find it there, and all sorts of other interesting things. You'll see lots of YouTubes by my grandson. Okay, he steals my iPhone and he knows how to use YouTube Capture. He makes films of himself, and before I can stop him, they're up on my YouTube channel. I delete some of them, but whenever he comes round, he finds my phone and does this. So everywhere I go, when I was in Saudi last week, somebody said, "We see your grandson on YouTube." I said, "Oh, he's doing that again," because I don't know what he's done. There you go. Okay, the four rules of... So what I want to talk about, I'll get to the four rules in a while. What I want to talk about is the process of writing. And this is what we do when we sit down to write. I mean, writing isn't easy. It's not easy for me either, not easy for anyone, because it's not a natural activity to do. We tend to sit down and we rearrange the workspace, we make ourselves a cup of coffee, we stare out the window, we go on Twitter, we go on Facebook and all these things. We do anything but write. And I think that's okay. I don't think this is a joke, by the way, that's not serious. I think it's okay to do those sort of things, because one thing I'd get across to you is you cannot sit and write 100,000 words or even 5,000 words of a chapter or whatever, 5,000 words of a scientific paper all at once. You need to take your time and break it down into small tasks. That's why you need to start fairly early. You really don't want to be getting yourself into the situation with a PhD, which is about the only time-limited piece of writing, significant piece of writing you're ever going to have to do, actually, because when you do research papers, you do them at your own time. You know, you don't want to be doing this a month before you've got to submit, or you're just not going to get it done, you know. So leave yourself plenty of time. But when you do, you know, don't worry too much if you can't get too much done at that time. Write whatever you can. And I've got some ideas about how much you should be writing. And do what you can. And if you need to do other things, by all means, do them. But you do have to do some writing at some point. I'll have to read this one out. I thought the screen might be bigger, but it says about writing a book, but you could put thesis in for book. It says, writing a book is an adventure. To begin with, it's a toy and an amusement. Then it becomes a mistress. Then it becomes a master. Then it becomes a tyrant. The last phase is that just as you are about to be reconciled to your servitude, you kill the monster and fling him out to the public. What I'm saying is that writing your thesis becomes, for some people, it could become really hard indeed in the middle of it. But, you know, it's something you start off enjoying it and you think, well, I'm going to get this done. But there's hardly a PhD student that doesn't, at the middle of it all, get really stressed out by the whole thing. And usually that stress stops them from writing, and usually that stress means they're not as productive as they do, and they worry too much about it. So hopefully I can give you some hints and tips, perhaps, how to overcome those fears, and certainly to overcome what some people call block, or writer's block. So First of all, why do you want to write? Well, I mean, this is not all so relevant to you, but for people like myself, it's an academic obligation. We have to write, but it's, you know, getting your PhD, getting publications out is one way of progressing your career. I know it's very important in Saudi for career progression in academia. I'm not so sure about other areas. Prestige of your institution and sharing things with people. Obviously, you want to do these things. And disseminating good practice, whatever you've found out. You can get some money for writing. But whatever your motivation, I think you've got to try and learn to enjoy writing. You know, it doesn't seem, for those of you in the middle of your PhD, it probably doesn't seem very enjoyable. And probably the one thing that some people learn from the PhD is that they never want to go through that process again. Well, that's learning it. But at some point, you've got to start enjoying it. You can't make it torture all of the time. So whatever anybody's written, I mean, you know, a tweet, a Facebook entry, a blog, an article, a scientific article, or a thesis, whatever they've done, they've overcome some kind of barrier to do it. I'm going to use other people's words, but Dale Salwa, because the Times Higher Education newspaper, which is a newspaper for academics, behind every written piece there's a living, breathing human being who overcame his or her own challenges to express important thoughts on paper. A long way of saying that whatever you see written, somebody's been behind that and somebody's written it. We tend to take for granted, you know, we open the newspaper or whatever in the morning, or we go online and read whatever we read, and there's lots of writing there, but somebody's sat down and written that, and you know, if they can do it, then so can you. So you've got to decide what's in your way and what the big challenges are for you. I will ask you, since there's not too many people, what's the biggest challenge in terms of writing, do you think? I've got a clear answer to it, but...
Arguing. The act of writing itself.
Focusing down, yeah, all important, yeah.
Weakness,
yes, okay.
Translate thoughts to actual words.
Right, so try getting thoughts into words, yeah, okay. Yeah, all, absolutely, I agree with them all, okay. But I think the biggest barrier really is finding the time to do it as well. Okay, I'm not belittling any of the things you said. You're absolutely right, but really, all of that takes time, and that's the thing we're all short of. As an academic, I'm really short of time to write, but as a PhD student, you're short of it too. And all my PhD students end up being short of it because they all leave far too little time to do it. But yeah, you're right. You know, getting your arguments down, making it clear. Sort of having weakness, as you said, and you're right, all these things are important too. But I think that you try, those things are beyond the actual writing. I think the main thing is, and I'll say this time and again in the next hour or so, getting something down is the most important thing, no matter how it looks or how it reads, and I'll come back to that in a while. So it's time. It's about time, really. And the longer we sit worrying about it, and the longer we sit thinking about it, and the longer we sit listening to people like me talking about it, the less time you've got to write. There's no time to write like the present. So how do you know, to be a writer, you've got to read a lot and write a lot. So that's somebody reading a lot and somebody writing a lot. And I'm going to use various authors. Again, in case you can't see it from the back, he says, this is an author called Stephen King. If you want to be a writer, you must do two things above all others, read a lot and write a lot. And he also says, which is the point of this, there's no way around these two things. There's no shortcut to writing, okay? I'm not making this sound very enjoyable, I know, but there isn't a shortcut. You have to sit down and do it sometime. We do tend to think there are other ways of doing it, but really getting down and doing it is the only way. But when do we do that? For how long do we do it? And how do we make it effective? And again, what you want to achieve from any session writing, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or half an hour, is something... Well, I say on a page, but on a computer screen usually. Another point about writing, I'm certainly the oldest person in the room. I can say that with equanimity. I can say that with confidence these days. I'm usually the oldest person in any room these days. I don't know how many of you write by hand. It's useful for taking notes, and I have a notebook that I carry with me all the time. But I would really advise you, just in case you're tempted, not to start trying to write your thesis by hand and then transcribe it. Because it just doesn't work. It's hopeless. it's hard work. Those of you doing qualitative research will have enough of that kind of thing to do, but don't try and do it that way. And I still have one or two colleagues around about my age, which is ancient, who still do that kind of thing. They don't tend to be the most productive writers. There's no excuse these days for not writing electronically. We've all got, and I haven't got it, we've all got mobile phones, iPads, really lightweight computers. We can write anywhere at any time. Get your thoughts down electronically, save them, back them up, cut them, paste them, get them into documents. So don't write by hand, don't write on paper, apart from notes and occasional ideas, but the quicker you get them into writing, the better. You can record things as well and do them by voice, but get them into electronic form and then they're useful to you. So as I say, don't try not to write by hand too much. Transcribing, it's a pain. I was in my first visit to Saudi, I think some of you may have heard this story already if you've heard me, it was in 1991. What happened in 1991?
Gulf War,
that's right. I was in the British Army and I was in Saudi in King Khalid Airport, where I left the other day there for 10 miserable weeks. We set up a hospital there in Terminal 3, I think, the one that may still be empty. There was certainly nothing in it then. And we were there for 10 weeks and I was away from home for 10 weeks and I was in danger for 10 weeks. I kept a diary every single day. And mostly it's how much I'm missing my family and all the rest of it. But every single day for 10 weeks exactly, I kept a diary. And my plan was always to transcribe that into electronic format. I was there from the beginning of January till middle of March. I haven't got till the end of January yet. It's an absolute pain trying to read and type things. So just another emphasis not to do that. I will someday, and then I'll put it out as a blog and you can read about my adventures in Saudi and 1991. That was a long time ago. The most advanced building in Saudi when I was there in 1991 was your Ministry of Interior building, the one that's upside down, the sort of triangular one like that. You could see it from miles away. Okay, now you can't find it. It's buried in the middle of the city. So Riyadh has changed a lot in those times. Okay, enough about Riyadh. Being a writer, Norman Mailer, another famous author, said, and I really like what he says, so I can get it to come up. He said, I learned to write by writing, okay? Yeah, again, you won't learn to write listening to me or doing writing courses or thinking about it or whatever, but I also really like the next one. He says, professionalism, which I don't mean you're necessarily going to be professional writers, but you have to, it's your job as a PhD student to write it up, comes from being able to write on a bad day, when things are not going well. Okay, I've got a colleague called Mark Cater, who Abdullah knows at Hull, and people often say, well, I don't feel like writing today, it's not the day I want to write. And so that's the day that you should be writing, okay? It's easy to write when you're feeling like writing, but you've also got to learn to write when you don't feel like it, okay? Whether if those of you in the room who are teachers or clinicians or whatever professional job you do, when you wake up in the morning back in Saudi and it's time to go to work, you might have a sore head, you might catch your toe on the dressing table, or you might have an argument with your wife or your husband or whatever, or your children might be annoying you. You still go off to work. You know, that doesn't stop you going. You don't say, oh, I don't feel like going. For some reason, when it comes to writing, people want everything to be perfect. You know, I don't feel like writing today because I've slightly got a headache. I've slightly done this, but really, you've really got to get beyond that. And I can't emphasize enough. It's not easy, but getting beyond thinking that writing is, you know, your job, your life seems to be here, your job is here, and writing always tends to be miles away. You've got to try and make it close to you and make it normal and part of what you're doing. And I've got another quote, and these are not my quotes, another quote which says much the same thing coming up in a few minutes. So try to learn to write on bad days. Also try to learn, and I think I'll come back to this, but again, in case I forget to emphasise it, try to write in bad places, by which I mean don't get used to writing in one place all the time. You know, some people, it's their kitchen table, it's their office, it's their bedroom, it's their living room. You're never there. I mean, my favourite place to write is my office in my house in Hull, but I'm never there. You know, I travel a lot, so you've got to learn to write in different places. So, apply yourself to the job of writing. There was a journalist called, an editor called Lord Beaverbrook. There was a newspaper which I'm not sure, I think it still exists, the Daily Express. I never read it. He was the editor of the Daily Express, and a young reporter came to him and said, How do I learn to write? How do I learn to become a journalist? And Beaverbrook said, application to the job of writing. And the guy went, brilliant, I never thought of that. I'll go off and do that. He went off and came back a few weeks later and thought, actually, sir, I'm not very sure what you mean by application to the job of writing. Could you explain it a bit more? So he said, apply the seat of your pants to the seat of a chair and don't get up until you've written something. That's what he meant by application. He meant you've actually got to find a time to get this bit here onto one of those and keep it on it until you've actually done some writing. It's not about anything else. It's about actually finding the time and making the time to do it. So there's somebody applying themselves to the job of writing. Okay, again, the only way to express writing is by showing people doing this, but try to learn not to write like that. So try to learn to write in all sorts of different places. I have little patience with my colleagues or my PhD students who, a true story. I went to a country with one of my PhD students on a trip to a conference, and we were both sitting in the same plane across the corridor from each other, and she seemed to be astonished that on the plane I had my computer out and I was writing. And I said, well, what else would I be doing? She said, well, you might be watching a film, you might be sleeping. I said, no, but I'm actually still being paid to work here, you know. So I've little patience with my colleagues who go off to conferences and put an email note up saying I'm out of my office, I won't be replying to emails. And then you say, what have you done? Did you finish off the paper? No, I didn't have time. I was flying, you know. But planes and trains and all sorts of the office, home, trains, planes, hotels, all brilliant places to write. Okay, so don't think when you're away from your PhD or away from your university or whatever that you can't write. You can. And as I say, hotel, I do lots of writing in hotels, because what else is there to do? Once you've been to the buffet three times and you're stuffed full, you know, go and do some writing. So all I'm trying to say facetiously is to try and be flexible in where you're writing. Don't think you've got to be sitting at the perfect place to do it, because you're never there. And there's all sorts of ways we can learn to write. Keep a notebook. As I say, there's a virtue in keeping a notebook. There's no virtue in writing lots and lots. Maybe a little bit of an exaggeration to be keeping a notebook in the shower. Apparently you do get waterproof notebooks. But you're all in your 20s. But I'll tell you, when you get to 40 years old, you begin to forget things. And when you get to 60 years old, as I am now, exactly, you cannot remember a thing. I just can't remember anything. If I don't take a note of things there and then, on my phone or whatever, you know, keep notes. Don't let ideas go out of your head. Get them down at any time. Don't think, I must remember that and I'll do it when I come back to doing my writing. Because even at, 22 years old, you might forget it. But as you go on, you will definitely forget it. So try and get into the habit of noting down the good ideas. Because by noting something down, you can then forget about it. All you need to do is remember where you put it. That's the other thing. I then think, did I put it in my phone? Did I put it in a notebook? Did I put it on the iPad? But never mind. Once you've found it, you can reuse it. But other ideas will come to you as soon as you've actually written it down. Very important part of the process. So learn to keep a notebook and be engaged with what you're doing wherever you are. Don't think, well, I'm away from Salford University, where a lot of people here seem to go. I've been doing my PhD now. Yes, you are. Your supervisor thinks you're doing a PhD, so you should be. Some of the don'ts of writing. Okay, plenty of do's, some of the don'ts. And these may seem a bit strange, but I mean them. Don't think about it. Okay, don't sit and think about writing for two reasons. One, thinking is not writing, it's thinking. Okay, it's not writing, it's thinking. And also, thinking about writing is procrastination, you know. You often think, well, actually I really can't be bothered writing just now, but I'll have a good think about it. Has anybody ever thought about writing? I mean, how far do you get? A couple of seconds. Because if you think, you don't write. I think what I'm trying to say is, don't think about it as an alternative to writing, okay? It's a good question. I do get asked this often. But I'll try and explain what I mean. But what we often do is we try to think about writing and we try to plan out what we're going to say, and it just doesn't work. Unless you've got one of these fantastic eidetic memories, which some people have, Always very disturbing people to work with to remember everything you've ever said. But anyway, I can't do that. What happens is you start thinking about it, and those of any psychologist in the room, you can only keep 5 to 8 thoughts in your head, and all that happens is they bang around in your head. Once you've written them down, you get rid of them. So I'm not saying that you don't have any intellectual engagement. I'm saying don't use thinking as a way of planning writing. Get something down. Anything you want related to the topic, think about it later. Sort it out later. So that's what I mean. And clearly, you've got to be at least sentient to do some and conscious to do some writing. But as I say, don't put it off this way. I would strongly encourage you, not to tell anybody about it. Don't tell people about your writing. Clearly, you might be working with colleagues, as I do, in part of research teams. You're working with a supervisor and you've got your colleagues around you. Somebody knows generally that you're writing, but don't overpromise things, you know. It's far better to turn up or to send your supervisor something out of the blue than to rush in at the last minute. Telling somebody about it means you're procrastinating. The more people tell me about what they're doing, often the less they're actually doing it. I have colleagues at Hull who are constantly telling me what they're going to write. Those are the ones who never write anything. The ones who write something are the ones who come along and show me something that they have written and could have a look at it, you know. So I think it's better not to get out of the habit of telling people. Hello.
Isn't it usually, sometimes it's a motivating thing? Like,
isn't it funny?
Yeah. I wouldn't actually give it up because I have to do it now.
Yeah. Well, okay. Okay. I mean, I had this point raised in Riyadh a couple of weeks ago by someone. It's a very good point. Some people don't work without the whip, as it were, you know, without the motivation to write and giving them a deadline. And clearly, it often comes to that with PhD students. I'm speaking as a supervisor now, and I'm speaking as a former PhD student from a long time ago, because I was just like you. Sometimes you have to be very, look, you're going to produce that by next week, for goodness sake, write something. But I'd really try not to get into that situation.
They will push you, but yeah. You would push you, in a way.
Yeah,
because
but...
you feel like, I have actually to work on it now.
Yes, yes.
You stop delaying things, because you know that you have to do them within...
Yeah, sure. I mean,
the papers. I'm not talking about the
Yeah, itself. Yeah. Oh, well, with papers, yeah. But, okay, I think you're quite correct. I just think it's better not to get into that situation because, I don't know about you, maybe you're calm or cool, calm and collected. I'm not. If somebody's telling me to do something and expecting something, I get stressed. Yeah. And then I can't think. That's the problem. I'd far rather go off and do it, you know. This is me. May not apply to everyone, but if I've got some writing to do, for example, I mean, I'm not saying I'm good or virtuous. It's the only way I can work. Don't wait for inspiration. Okay, that doesn't happen. Okay, we're always waiting for something to come floating through the window or down through the ceiling. There's only one place that you're going to get inspiration for writing, apart from doing lots of reading. I think reading's very important. If you really can't write, read something. Okay, you know, don't watch the telly. Read something. You know. But don't wait for inspiration, because it's in your head, the inspiration. The inspired part of writing, as someone's going to say, is twofold. One, pulling the table up to the chair and doing it. But the inspired part of writing comes after you've blasted it out. Just lay it up. The inspired part comes in moving it about and editing it and shifting it around. That's what the inspired part is. So don't wait around for inspiration. Like the Nike advert, just do it. Okay, now that sounds trite. I'm not trying to be simplistic about it, but you know, and I'm not trying to make it, it doesn't even sound very much like fun, I know, but you do have to sit down and actually do some writing, and then you'll be happy, because then you've got it. Nobody can take it away from you, but you can sort it out, you know, you can sort it out. Something else, sort of slightly peripheral to it, but do learn very quickly to be almost obsessive compulsive about storing, saving, backing up and storing, okay? Nothing worse than losing a bit of writing. You know, you could lose 5,000 words, so just be clear. It's very easy these days. Even little data stick, well, if it hadn't been for Abdullah, I'd have left my data stick in there. That's all that happened to have in it, but I know some people, that's all they do. And I've walked away from lectures overseas and left a data stick, which luckily someone posted to me. But I once left a data stick in Heathrow Airport in the British Airways lounge with all my work on it. every single thing, except it had been backed up a week before, but everything from that week was completely lost. And that was just a stupid mistake, just rushing for the plane and leaving it. So I'm saying, learn to back things up regularly, frequently and regularly. And I would say at least every week, but even immediately back things up if you can, especially a PhD thesis. Because I have a colleague at the University of Edinburgh. He's a professor of psychology, one of the most senior psychologists in the world. Lost his whole PhD thesis when he was on the discussion because of a computer crash, okay? And what he did, he just sat down for days on end and just wrote the thing again. But anyway, I'm not trying to frighten you. It's easily overcome. So put pen to paper, delay no more. Just do it. Okay, just remember that you can edit a bad page of writing, okay? You can pour out a couple of thousand words and it may be rubbish, but you can do something with it. You can edit it, but you cannot edit a blank page of paper or a blank computer screen. And if I've said it already, I'm saying it now, and just like I said, I'll say it again. Get some writing done, and then you've 90% of the job is done. All you have to do is move it around a little bit and show it to your supervisor, who says do it all again, you know. But the supervisors don't like blank pages, and neither should you. Oh, I said this already. Orhan Pamuk says, inspiration is the act of drawing the chair up to the writing table. And seriously, that is the most inspired part. Say, I'm going to do some writing now. Now, I really do not advocate, and again, you might have different views on this. Some of you who are nearer the end might have experiences that contradict me. But I really don't think you should be setting aside whole days to write, or whole weeks, or whole months. You may well, if you've got the luxury, you may have 3 months or even more to write up your PhD. But anybody who sits down and says, right, this week I'm going to finish all of that chapter, or this morning I'm going to get 2,000 words done, is kidding themselves, because you won't. Okay, you cannot write for too long. You get frustrated, you run out of ideas, and if you try to push it, you sit there and you can end up in tears, you know, because you can't do it. The best thing is to do is cut your losses and get away, and then go back to it later. Much the best thing to do. So don't punish yourselves by, I must get this done, you know. Try and do other things as well, you know. Do your Twitter tweeting and blogging and all the rest of it in between times. Try and space out the writing. But don't do that as an alternative to write. Get some writing done, but, you know, don't try to do too much. It just never works. I'll come back to that in my four rules. I haven't even got to the four rules yet. So here, can you see that picture from the back there? This is how not to write, okay? And I can guarantee this isn't how not to write, because this is how I used to write. And I can imagine there are people in the room who are writing like this at the moment. What you do is you photocopy every article that you've read on your subject, and you have it sitting around you on a table so that you can reach it easily, and you can knock it, you know, you can chisel it into your PhD. Not the way to write at all. By all means, read them, you know, understand the background. You'll have to have read these things to do it. But I would really advocate, and that was a revelation to me when I learned to do this, put them out of arm's length. If it's bunches of PDFs on your desktop, close them all, and then just write. Just think, what am I going to write? What is it? What do I want to say based on what I've written? And that will flow. You'll get your 500,000 or whatever many words you want to write done much more quickly than if you sit there thinking, now how am I going to get that one and that one? Look at that, see, touch the screen. How am I going to get, you know, because all that happens is you stop writing. You start looking through for an idea, it becomes very staccato, you can't join it together, and it shows. It shows when people write like that. Write, just write without reference to anything other than the ideas in your head. Then go back to the literature and say, right, I need to, no, don't go back to, when I say back to, go back to what you've written and say, I need to support that point. So I think there's a reference to do that. That point I can't find support for. You either take it out or you explain it some other way. So this is a revelation to me. And I learned this because I used to carry a briefcase with me everywhere and a little rucksack full of all the PDFs of anything I was writing at the time. And I'd get onto a train, I'd spread them all out and I'd try it. And I went one day, and I can't remember, I left in a hurry from my office. I was working in Dublin at the time, and I was going to Belfast, and I left in a hurry, didn't have time to go to my office, left all the papers there, got on the train, thinking, oh, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to write now. And I managed to write, you know, I think I wrote a whole paper, that not all at once, but various parts of the journey there on the way back, without any paper. That's the way to write, much more quickly than if I'd sat looking at all the papers. Labouring the point, you know. This is a real picture from a friend of mine. She's from Thailand, and she was working with me at Hull. You can see she's got her thing to tie her hair back, and she's got her packet of biscuits, and she's got her mobile phone, and she's got her music, you know, and all that. That looks like suntan cream. I don't know what that's doing there, but you know what I mean. Everything's there that she needs, but I think she got something written eventually, but it's not the best way to do it. So, Dale Salwak, I mentioned him already, says, instead of planning or thinking too much about what you're going to do, just get something on paper before you forget it. Don't worry about how confusing it sounds, okay, because nobody else is going to read it for a start. I think there's a tendency, and I feel it as well, is when we write something, we feel a bit embarrassed about it. I mean, it's not easy to show other people you're writing. In fact, it's not easy sometimes to open a file up and read what you've written yourself. That's one thing you get used to. That's one thing you do get used to when you're writing. But I know when I started, I see some nods here. I know when I started writing that I'd open up, oh God, isn't that terrible? But that's exactly what you want to see. Because then you want to sort, well, why is it terrible? It's out of order, it's ungrammatical, it's unsupported, so you can start to sort it. If you've nothing there, you can't sort it. So just get it down. He says, suggest that writing a draft before you do any research. I mean, that's maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but what he means is don't do what my colleague was doing, researching everything. Write it and then try and fit it in, try and support it that way. And actually, this is very true. We don't actually know what we're going to write until we actually write about it. It sounds an obvious thing to say, but I think there's a desire in people to want to know what they're going to say at the end of what they've written and what all the arguments are going to be all the way through. Write it and the arguments will develop as you go through, remarkably. One of the best ways to practice writing is to get used to doing it regularly and often. I mean, regularly could be once a year, but I mean frequently and often. And, you know, writing all sorts of things. Start a blog. You know, that's a good way to practice writing. I do have I think you were saying about deadlines. I do have a deadline blog to do every month for Sigma Theta Tau. So I just think, well, you know, to heck with this, I'm just going to write something. You know, I'm going to write about what I've been doing. Say it was today, on the train home, I'd write about my experiences today. I wouldn't know what I was going to do when I started. I'd just get it finished, you know. And then you can sort it out. So just don't be too worried about what the end product's going to look like. Deal with the beginning product. Nobody else is going to read it until you've sorted it out, so don't be too worried about it. Four rules of writing. At last we've got to them, more than halfway through. Okay, the four rules of writing. I'm going to give you my four rules, and then I'm going to go through them one by one and sort of expand on them slightly. And I'll try and, I mean, by all means ask questions or discuss, but I'll try and leave a bit more time for questions at the end of this one. First of all, read the guidelines. Now that refers mainly to writing publications, but it also refers to writing PhDs. There is guidance available in most universities, and I'll come back to writing PhDs just in a second. Set realistic targets and count words. I'll come back to that. Nothing happening. There we go. Seek criticism. Obviously, as somebody who's being supervised, you've already got built-in criticism, but you need that criticism. You need somebody else looking at it. If you're terrified to show something to your supervisor, why don't you share it with the people around you, or with colleagues, you know, with other people? You need somebody has to look at your writing. And this is, again, with reference to published papers, but in a way, it should also refer to the heavy criticism you sometimes get from your supervisors. Treat a rejection, I put it in slightly lighter writing, but treat a rejection as the beginning of the next submission. I know when I showed my first ever chapter to my PhD supervisor a long time ago in the University of Sheffield, there was more red ink on it than there was black typeface, you know, it was just completely destroyed, you know, and I nearly wept, you know, and I just thought, I've just got to start again and work on that, you know, treat it as the beginning, just say, that's the starting point, you know, don't rip it up, just say, I'm going to take that and I'm going to move on with it. It's exactly the same if you're writing papers for publication. Exactly the same process, but this doesn't refer quite so much here. So that's for a journal. Read the guidelines; they're there. But if it's for a PhD, take a look at other theses in your university. I said this this morning already. You know, don't write into a vacuum. You know, have some idea what it is you're doing. A PhD in engineering or social sciences may look very different. Make sure you find ones that are like yours, even find ones that are doing similar studies. How did they do it? If they're on the shelf and they've passed, if you do follow that, you're quite likely to pass as well. So don't sit scratching your head about what the guidelines might be. Read them or find somebody who's been through the process already. Having said that, your supervisor should be giving you some idea. If he or she's not, they're not a very good supervisor. Guidelines for journals, but guidelines as well for PhDs, give length. They advise on layout, organisation and referencing systems. Perhaps not so important for a PhD, but you do need to get some idea of what the overall length is going to be. If it's 100,000 words, you probably quite likely end up writing a couple of 100,000 words before it gets down to the, don't say, well, it's 100,000 words, if I write this much every day, I'll get there, because you need longer than that. So you've got to plan it out, or you're going to end up sitting up all night to get it done. Layout, I really believe with PhD thesis or first drafts of papers, get the layout right from the beginning. There's nothing worse than single-spaced, size 10, Arial thin. Is it Arial, that horrible font? Unreadable. Don't say to your supervisor or to somebody you're working with on a paper, well, I was going to sort that out after. No, sort it out then. Make it right there and then, because then it will be ready to go, ready to roll when you get going. So don't leave it. Organisation I talked about previously. That's the different sections of your PhD referencing system. Well, that will be unique to your own university. I have to say, that's another thing with referencing. People tend to leave it until the end. And I know there's RefMan and whatever, EndNote systems these days, which I have to admit I've never actually used myself. But I'd get the referencing sorted out as soon as you can. Don't leave the referencing until the end. Fatal. Because you'll lose references, you'll forget them, you'll get them out of place. Try and get the references sorted as you go through. However, don't try and reference as you write, as I said. Try and write and then put the references in, but do that at some stage before you put a chapter to bed, for example, but before it's to bed and you go on to the next one, try to have all the references sorted out, either at the end of the chapter or at the end of the actual thesis. Setting targets. Right. So the first one was reading the guidelines. Find guidelines, find a template. Setting targets. Now, all good writers do this. It was another of the revelations to me when I was speaking to colleagues who, other editors and other writers, and I heard two people in a row at different writing workshops saying setting targets, and I'd never thought of this in my life before. First time I heard it, I thought, well, that's okay for him. Next time I heard it, I thought, there might be something in this. So I always write to a target now. So you should try to write, as a PhD student, I think you should be writing every single day, and you certainly will be when it comes to writing up, but try and do it to a target. For academics or for beyond your PhD, and you're writing up papers and you might be busy doing other things, make sure you write a certain number of words every time you sit down to write, and don't get up until you've written it. So try and find short, quality times to write. Good times are really early in the morning, I have to say, before you go to work. 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock in the morning, that's a good time. I wouldn't write for a whole 2 hours, but sometime then, if you've got the time. When you get to work, get there, instead of getting there at, because in Saudi you seem to start ridiculously early at work, much earlier than we do, but you finish earlier too. But say it's a typical UK hours, 9 to 5, get in at 8:30, do a bit of writing before you teach your first class, run your first clinic, or do whatever engineers and other people do. And before you go home at night, another half hour of writing, just a little bit of writing, and try to piece together a certain number of words if you can. Don't think that, it's a pity, but you have to write out of working hours if you're going to write. You're never going to be a successful writer if you don't. So sorry for those of you who are married, you've got to tell your spouse, you're going to be writing at weekends and you're going to be writing at home. You have to do little bits, but don't sit for hours writing. Just do little bits. When you've reached your target, stop. Don't go beyond it. Now, my target is quite small. It's 500 words every time I sit down to write. Okay, I don't have time to write every single day, but sometimes I write several times a day, and I always write 500 words. I just blast it down, watch the word counter till it gets to 500 words, and then go, good, stop, rest. Any ideas that are in your head, put them down as bullet points. Don't forget them. Don't think I'll remember that tomorrow. Put them as bullet points, And then next time you open up the file, they're there. That's your starting point. And once you've started, you'll carry on writing. So don't write your 500 words and draw a line under it. Try and leave a sticky bit that you can pick up the next day. And that would apply when you're writing a PhD as much as writing a paper. Something else that's useful to do is possibly not so useful for a PhD because the scale's just much bigger. But writing scientific papers, it's worth putting all the headings and subheadings onto a sheet and say, start off with a blank sheet of paper, put in title, you have to write the title, just put title, page break, abstract, page break, introduction, you get the idea. Then from no words, you've got about 12. Save the file, give it a name that's sensible, like my new paper, and leave it. Don't do anything that day. Next day, open it up, and you've immediately got slots into which you can put your writing. So you don't have to start at the beginning. You might have an idea for the discussion, you might have an idea for the introduction, fill it up and set a target, watch the counter, stop when you get to it. My wife's the marathon runner, I've only done a half marathon. When my wife first did the London Marathon, she got to the end feeling exhausted, but a couple of miles before the end. When she got to the very end line, she said, I felt fantastic, I could have done it again, she said. She couldn't if she'd have fallen over and collapsed, you know. It's the same with writing. Don't try and push on or you become disappointed. Stop. So set yourself targets, and again, what this guy, Philip Hodgson, says is that the people who succeed treat it like a job. Again, life, work, and writing always seems to be miles away. It's, that's something somebody else does. I don't like doing it. I'll get around to it eventually. If you just keep it close and work it into what you do, then you're fine. You do your teaching, you do your clinics, you do your engineering, you do whatever you do, you know, just work it into your job. Don't see it as a big task that's outside. And again, if you are a PhD student, it is your job. And once you've done your study, that is your job. But think of the targets. Don't let anything get in the way of when you started writing. Don't find excuses to stop, okay? One of the excuses for stopping writing is, I can't think of the right word. So you sit there thinking of the right word and you're looking out for inspiration and you're thinking about it, and then, I'll come back to that later. If you can't think of the right word, you're nodding, hey, I see you. I've met you all before in one way or another. If you can't think of the right word for example, elephant, okay, just put in brackets, big animal, long nose, floppy ears, and move on. And then you'll come back to it, you know. I did exactly that the other day. I couldn't remember the name for the drug donepezil, which ironically is for dementia, early stage dementia. So I just put anticholinesterase, approved by NICE, and went on, and then it came back, donepezil, got it. You know, just don't use an excuse to think, well, I can't think of the right word. Also, don't try and find a clever word. If you put the word car, don't think, well, it would sound better as automobile, just car, plain English. First words that come to your mind, put them down. Seeking criticism, okay? Find a critical friend. To be a great writer, get a great critic. Now, you will have a built-in critic as your PhD supervisor, and you will have to show stuff to him or her eventually. I know that not every PhD supervisor is as good as I am, is as good at reading stuff and commenting, but you do have to show it to them. Every time PhD students don't show, you're not under any obligation to do it. And you are allowed in most universities to submit without your supervisor's approval. I would never do that in a million years. Whenever it happens, and I've been at the receiving end of those as an examiner and once as a supervisor, and she failed. Okay? Now, and it's very rare to fail, but you really have got to. I'm not trying to raise anxieties. You see a few deep breaths coming in there, but I'm just saying, do make sure your supervisor knows what you're writing. And if you're not happy with what your supervisor's, you know, showing you, or do, you've got to find somebody to read it, okay? Find another member of staff. I'm not trying to interfere with... somebody's got to read it. You've got to find a critic. So don't find that sort of person, you know, who's always aggressive with you. And if your supervisor's always like that, I'd suspect that they're not a very good supervisor and you may have to find somebody else. But also, don't look for that, okay? Big bear hugs. You know, the person who takes your writing and says, that's fantastic, is lying, because your writing isn't fantastic. It can always be changed. But likewise, the person who says it's a load of rubbish isn't correct either, because it's good stuff in it. You need to get somebody who's, sorry, a very sexist picture of a man and a woman, you know, helping up the hill, but you know what I mean. Somebody who's been up the hill who says, right, this is how you do it, you know, try and you're lucky if you've got a supervisor like that, but you need to find somebody like that. And that could be somebody sitting next to you, could be anyone. But this is the hardest part of writing, I think. The hardest part isn't writing. Once you've got the knack of getting stuff down and writing, the most difficult part is showing somebody else by far, because that's when you start to get criticism or help. I don't mean negative criticism, by the way. I mean, you know, comments. Right. Expect to have several revisions, okay? A writer called James Michener was asked once, are you one of the world's greatest writers? He said, no, I'm one of the world's greatest rewriters. The best writers are willing to go over it again and again and again. But again and again. You know, expect to have this kind of thing to do. But what I would advise you to do is once you've had comments on your writing from someone, or you've gone through it yourself and seen a few things that need changing, do them, save it, close it, put it away. Don't try to, you know, don't come out of a supervision meeting with all the ideas fresh in your mind and then start writing, provided you've got notes and it's all been, you know, don't lose what's being said, but don't go into it with any kind of emotions, you know, just put it aside, come back to it and say, I know that needs revision, and do it then. If you do it under stress, anger, tears in your eyes, you just make a mess of it, you know, you just, you know, have a break from it. Write something else, but don't go back to it straight away. Try and pace it out a little bit. And also, which I think is the most, well, I keep saying the most difficult part. This is a difficult part. I don't find this difficult now, but it comes with practice. You've got to learn when to let go. That's the point of difficulty, is not only letting go a chapter to your supervisor, but letting go the whole thing for examination. And some supervisors are a bit like this as well. They're always all like, okay, if we just do a little bit more, at some point, one of you's got to say, that's it, you know, that's it. And if you're going to get into the academic world and do papers for publication, you absolutely have to let them go. If you don't, they just accumulate. You've got to let them go and get into a production line idea about doing it. So let it go at some point. What's the worst that can happen? You'll get some criticism, you know, good. You get used to it. So that's all I've got to say about that. I've left some time for questions about this or the other session or anything at all about PhD writing. This is about writing for publication in nursing and healthcare, but it's got some useful tips about writing anyway. It's edited by Karen Holland, who some of you may know from Salford, those in nursing. She's just retired recently, and by me. It doesn't cost very much money, but I've got 6 grandchildren. They need presents at Christmas, so if you buy the book, then it all helps towards my family, you know. That's my email and my Twitter account if you want to follow me. Anybody got an ORCID number or know what an ORCID number is? No? ORCID numbers are something, if you're going to get into academic life, you should maybe register as soon as you possibly can and get an ORCID number. Because when you publish papers these days, most journals expect you to submit your ORCID number with them. Thanks very much.